Welcome to Book Notes, Ohio Channel's conversation show, where we look at Ohio authors and books about Ohio. This episode is a little bit different as we welcome a newer format of writing. Creative, award-winning, and prolific, cartoonist Jeff Smith ranks as one of the best graphic novelists in America today. Raised in Ohio and currently a Columbus, Ohio resident, Jeff Smith was the self-publisher of the Bone series. He has worked on numerous other projects and has been awarded 10 Eisner Awards for his comics. His most recent work is Rassel, a noir science fiction story that focuses on a protagonist who can jump through parallel universes. And thank you, Jeff Smith, for joining us today. When Bone was published, Time magazine said it's probably the best all-ages graphic novel ever published.
Wow.
Did they?
Yes.
No, I knew they did.
There you are. So that right now, in our contemporary culture, we've got comics thrown at us. If we don't have just comics or graphic novels, we have movies that are made out of comics. Does this make you feel that there's like a renaissance of the whole drawn story thing, or do you think it's always kind of been that way?
Oh, no, there's definitely been a big change, a huge shift in the last 20 years. This is my 25th year since I did the first issue of Bone. And it was a very different scene. It was a different industry. The art form was the same, almost. But it was comic books, but they were only available in comic book stores, and there were really very few women or children reading comics 25 years ago. Now it's like they're the movies. Yeah, they're graphic novels. You can get them on Amazon. There's a New York Times graphic novels bestsellers list. I mean, that was impossible to imagine 20 years ago. And the work being done is also at a higher level than I could remember since I was started reading comics in the 60s. You got Chris Ware, you have Frank Miller, you've got Paul Pope. I shouldn't try to list them off, or I'll forget all my friends. But the craftsmanship is at an all-time high.
Now, we were talking before we were rolling. I was worried about the whole idea of calling you a cartoonist or a comic book artist versus graphic novel. Can you kind of talk about the distinguishing characteristics of those?
A cartoonist is someone who writes and draws their own things. So a really good example would be Peanuts, because Charles Schulz wrote every word and drew every frame. Bill Watterson was also a cartoonist. Some strips, I can't think of an example right now, but there's often, you know, one person writes it and another person draws it. So they're a comics artist and a comics writer. So that's pretty much the difference. As far as a graphic novelist, that's just what we call fat comic books that have a spine.
Now, I think you're just a little bit older than me, but in the generation of my youth, we were always told that comic books would rot your brain. I actually find ironic now, of all the things that can rot your brain. And it's a really good way to introduce people to words and story and narrative and everything like that. Growing up, were you ever discouraged away from comics?
Not really. Like, my family was they're very creative. My mom used to paint. She would just paint little plaques and sell them in little gift shops around town. My dad loved Mad Magazine, and he used to read it to me before I could even read. And Don Martin was a huge favorite of both of ours. So, and they encouraged me to draw. I mean, I had a grandma who used to give me piles of paper and crayons, and I would just sit on the floor while the grown-ups were all talking and just draw and draw and draw.
So, Bone actually had part of its origins when you were like 6 or 7?
Yes, that's true.
And so the character came out from you were drawing a telephone receiver or something?
Well, the first drawing of him, he had just had his mouth open really wide. He looked like a landline telephone receiver. And also, like I said, I love Don Martin, who used to use this word, phone bone, all the time. In fact, there's an excellent example right here. I don't know which camera's working, but there you go.
That was his kind of generic term, right?
Phone bone is watching you. Yeah. Well, that was like his generic name, Dr. Phone Bone or Mrs. Phone Bone. And I got to meet Don Martin one time. It was really wonderful at the big San Diego Comic-Con out in California. And his wife came up and introduced themselves to me when Bone was just starting to get going, and It was really nice.
Did he know that he was part of the inspiration?
Yeah. Oh, he totally did. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
He knew that it was a loving tip of the hat, for sure.
That's really awesome. What a very nice compliment to him. The characters are Phony Bone, the main character Phone Bone, and then Smiley Bone.
Right.
So how did the names come about?
Phone Bone was named after the Don Martin character. They were called Bones because they look like bones, kind of, like little cartoon bone that like Pluto would chew on. And I think Phony Bone was kind of like the anti-Phone Bone. He was for Phone Bone's selflessness, Phony was greedy and selfish and whiny. So he was the phony Phone Bone. And then Smiley was just a big larking goof. So
yeah, he just kind of went along for the ride. Yeah. Did you ever have that epiphany that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Yeah, I think so. I knew I wanted to be some kind of an artist. Back then, Walt Disney was on television every Sunday night and would introduce, you know, the Walt Disney Show. And I knew that you could make up your own characters. I knew that Charles Schulz made up Snoopy. I knew that Walter Lantz made up Woody Woodpecker, and that Walt Disney made up Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse. So I did want to do that. I didn't know how or think it through that much, but it probably wasn't until after high school that I really said, I'm now going to attempt to break into the field and be serious.
You went to Worthington High School.
Worthington High School.
You probably took art classes there.
I did.
Were you cartooning then for that?
Oh, I certainly was. I'm sure there's some embarrassing drawings of Phone Bone in the yearbook somewhere.
So Phone Bone has just stuck. I mean, you've really stuck with this character.
Yeah, well, I didn't know I was going to draw him when I got older, but I've drawn him my whole life. And yeah, I wasn't able to shake him.
It really is a testament to sticking with something that you know.
Yeah, or maybe it's a problem. I don't know. I might have issues.
So was there, I'm looking to like how the whole idea of narrativity came. Like, you know, it's one thing to draw characters, but then to draw them and put them in a story. Can you talk a little bit about your evolution into that? Bone became it was a 9-volume, and you can see that published them all together, it's a big, thick book.
Yeah, that's the whole story right there.
It is the War and Peace of comics,
yes,
right?
Yes. Well, I wanted to make a Moby Dick of comics. That was my big idea, was to have a comic book that had a literary structure with a beginning and a middle and an end, which was very, very rare 25 years ago.
I was going to say, so did you have any, I'm thinking of when did Mouse come out?
Mouse came out in 86.
Okay.
And that, when I saw that, I had a complete revelation. Because I had been trying to do Bone as a newspaper comic strip, sort of like Peanuts or Calvin and Hobbes. But I wanted to have it tell a complete story so that eventually it would come to an end and the whole thing would make sense. I was roundly discouraged by all the newspaper syndicates. They loved the Bone characters and they liked my humor, but they didn't like the ongoing story at all.
So were you writing Bone on a week-by-week basis, not knowing if there was going to be an end? Or were you looking at, like, I know this is going to be, you know, a 55, you know, chapter type of work?
I did know that it had to have an ending. It needed that structure. Because when I was doing the newspaper strip in the Lantern, it was kind of a joke a day, fish out of water.
That was Thorn.
It was called Thorn, but it was basically a proto run at Bone. It's the same characters. The bones are all in it. They're from some place called Boneville that's obviously a lot like where we live. Mm-hmm. And all the fairy tale dragons and monsters and princesses are you know, like out of Grimm's fairy tales or something, or out of Lord of the Rings. And that was my little hook, was that you relate to the cartoony Bone characters and the humans who are weird. But I didn't have a story in mind. It was just these little jokes every day, and I was thinking, it needs a little more purpose. It needs a little more depth, and I worked out a story. It took me about 5 years, but I did, and I wrote the ending first, once I got to it. Wrote like the last 3 pages out in quite a bit of detail. And then I worked my way backwards. I said, well, you know, what's the halfway point? What's the halfway point between there? And these big decisions that they would have to make that would, you know, they'd really have to pull out their moral centers to like make some of these decisions. And then I went back and I drew page one.
You know, it was interesting, and I was just thinking about this. This is a kind of a big wide angle view of things, is that the big popularity right now is binging on shows. So right. You have Stranger Things from Netflix, A House of Cards. You can do Lost or Game of Thrones now. You'll be able to get those. And I start to think about serialized books that have an end. You can get them individually, right. But you can also wait for the big, you know, collection to come out so you can...
To binge or,
Yeah, and I wonder about if there's a change for the public, like, really wanting to have immersive narrative.
I think so. I mean, the story is so crucial to us as a species. It just really is. And every culture has so many stories, and a lot of them very similar. I just read that there's going to be a new Star Trek series, but it's going to tell a single story so that at the very end you'll be able to binge watch it and it'll be one overarching narrative.
I thought that
was interesting. Yeah. Well, of course.
I love Star Trek.
I'm a total geek. I'm going to
watch it no matter what. But yes, I like having conclusive endings.
But that's very different from every other Star Trek before it. And I think it's a new thing. There was that Stranger Things show on TV. It's the same way.
So let's also talk about, in some ways your stories are partly, I can connect to the actual creative process. We don't really know what it's from or anything. So we have Bone and the dream world. This other world is very important. Is it dream or is it real? And then we have in Rassel, we have a whole parallel universe. So these kind of other world quantum physics kind of stuff, you use these as very strong narrative devices.
Oh, you're doing well. Come on, you're coming out in the weeds. Let's go. Come on.
So, what interests you? Why use these as such big narrative devices?
It's what's interesting to me is what we can't see. You know, in Bone, it's the dreaming. It's sort of like a fantasy realm, almost like, I don't know, the world of the dead in the Odyssey or something. In Rassel, it's parallel universes. And those two things kind of, that just was fascinating to me, whether you approach it from science, like in Rassel, or more of a philosophical or religious bent, like in Bone.
Bone is a scholastic, all ages kind of book. Mm-hmm. Rassel's more of a mature audience type of thing. What kind of mind shift did it take you to go from a purely kind of an all ages market to now one that's more adult?
It didn't take much of a shift for me personally. I was thinking about Rassel a few years before Bone was even completed. I started thinking ahead, and basically I'd be working real late at night inking, and I would have my laptop open. I'd be watching like Humphrey Bogart movies, you know, The Big Sleep or The Maltese Falcon. That kind of got me into noir, and the other thing I would watch a lot of would be like Carl Sagan's Cosmos or that Brian Greene did The Elegant Universe. And so there's parallel universes and... you know, physics, and so I was into all that, and I thought, just like I took Bone, where I said, hey, I'm going to put, you know, Bugs Bunny in The Lord of the Rings, it'll be great, everybody will love it. This crazy idea popped into my head, mix Humphrey Bogart with string theory, and it'll be fun, and it was really fun for me to do. Not only did I have to do research on physics to understand it, because good Lord, but I had to actually do a little research on the iconography of noir, shadows that, you know, jag right across, you know, someone's face. You know, it might be in the background, but there's angles and shadows.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And I put that in there.
When it's Dr. Robert is with Uma, that you see the blinds in the back. It's a very nice rendering of that. Yeah. It feels very film noir-y. In the collected novel, in the graphic novel. Cartoons, comics.
Graphic novel, that's what they're called. That's what they're called.
It's colored, okay? Yes. As it's released in the large format, which was my preferred
serialized
format.
Yeah.
Right. Reading them both, I thought that it felt color in here, but like the way it's inked becomes part of the narrative. How do you, as a writer, artist, how do you know, like, I'm going to let words take over sometimes, and then I'm going to let scenes take over other times?
A lot of that's fairly natural. My writing process is... I just get out like a 8.5 by 11 blank piece of paper, and I pretty much treat it as a comic book page. And I've thought about it a little bit, and I mark off the boxes the way I think they're gonna be. And as fast as I can, I do a quick scribble and I write the words. It's just to keep it as simultaneous as possible, because I really want the reading experience to be very present. I want you to be very present in the book with the characters. I don't want it to feel like the characters now are going to know what's going to happen. Any good novelist is going to try to be that way. To me, there's no difference in if I write it out and say, he's climbing along a ledge, okay, or showing him climbing along a ledge, right? It's the same thing. You don't need to do it.
Do you have in either Bone or Wrestler or both? Do you have scenes that you really were looking forward to draw? Are there characters that you enjoy drawing more than others?
When I sit down to either do a chapter or even start a whole project, there's usually some image or scene that has kind of come together in my mind, and it's what drives the whole project. And like with Bone, you know, every time I have to sit down and do a new chapter, I knew where the last chapter left off. I kind of, first thing I have to figure out is where's this one going to leave off? And then what's supposed to happen? What needs to happen in this thing? And usually there's one really strong image that everything else is built around. And that image might just be an exciting piece of scenery or visual imagery, or it might be a real turning point for one of the characters. He gets a real surprise, or it's everything was going one way and he didn't realize it was not the way he thought it was going. So things like that. It's usually just built around some image that's waiting.
Huh. So do you have like the whole parallel universe suit? What was that called? The jumpsuit?
His T-suit.
T-suit, that's right.
For Tesla, or teleportation.
Right.
I had physicist friends check a lot of my science and my ideas, and of course, obviously, it's very fantasy-oriented, but I wanted it to be real plausible. The only thing that they really, really thought was ridiculous was these big things that look like jet engines that he holds on his shoulders to power up and go. I mean, you got to have these big electromagnetic engines, and that actually became part of the theme behind in the book, where the most high-tech thing imaginable in the whole book looks like a beat up something he stole out of a junkyard and built in his garage. So it became a thing for me that this low tech in the most possible highest possible high tech world.
You know, I see those and I think those are cool. I'm like, I wonder if you really like. And there's a few scenes in Bone where you go to a spread and they're like, there's a night scene where they can see the village and in the distance. I'm like, that just had to be so much fun to draw.
It was fun to draw. It holds a story purpose too. It kind of. It's like in a scene in a movie where they scratch in the dirt and say, this is what we're going to do. It's kind of like a diagram to show the audience what's happening. Yeah. And that's what you show the valley. You could see almost everything where they were going.
So a lot of the writers on the show, they use words to connote emotion, story, obviously. You have characters' faces that you will leave. A lot of the panels have no words in them at all. So we're looking at the pace of the framing, but we're also looking at what are these characters thinking, and we have to look at their expressions. How long did that take you? How much do you struggle over, like, they would look like this or this to connote this emotion?
I can tell you this. When I do a chapter, it's usually between 20 and 24 pages long. I write it all first, and usually in that script, that little fast doodle I do, pretty much is just the face, so I can remember what I basically was thinking they would be thinking or acting like, or what their expression was. Then I go through and I, make all the squares on all 20 pages. I put all the lettering on all 20 pages, and then I start drawing the pictures in, and the first thing I ink are the faces. And I just go through and I just do the faces, not even their whole heads, just the faces, because the most important thing is the acting and the expression. These characters have to emote to tell the story. And the reason I do it first is because, the deadline is coming up like a freight train, right? And you're going to start blowing things off pretty soon. So it's okay to blow off a little in the background, but you've got to have that acting solid, because it's just like in a film. If you're not believing or are seeing the interior life of these characters, you're not buying it.
And I would push the fact, it is really nice to have everything all nice and neat in one, but these oversized books, which was really nice, is that there's often at the end some of your sketches, of the bars where you took the ideas from.
Yeah.
So I have just a few more questions. One of my I need to ask is, how do you think Ohio in specific has helped your career as a cartoonist?
Well, I know that my parents used to take me down to Old Man's Cave a lot when I was a kid, at least two or three times a summer, and I fell in love with it. It's about 40 miles south of Columbus. It's the very foothills of the Appalachian mountain range. And you've got gorges and these big over, Old Man's Cave is this huge overhang. I assume you've been there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. And as a kid, I used to imagine, what if you could set like a little story here, some kind of a fantasy. I didn't know it was going to be Bone, but later on, that's what happened. The world of Hocking Hills and the southern Ohio's foliage and rocks, that's all in Bone. Well, I'm going to read a little selection from Bone. The setup here is that Phone Bone is now living with Thorn and her grandmother in a little cabin in the middle of the woods. And it's at night, and the cabin is surrounded by rat creatures, these big, shaggy, sharp-toothed monsters. And they hear them outside. And so Phone Bone and Thorn come running downstairs. Grandma, what's going on? Where are they? Grandma, who's lighting a candle, says, they surrounded the house. Hurry down here. And Phone Bone says, do you think it's safe to have all these lights burning? Maybe we should douse them. No, the lights are keeping the monsters back. If it was dark in here and the rat creatures thought we were asleep, we'd be dead right now. Thorn asks, how many are there? Don't know. Here, Bone, hold this. Phone Bone says, oh man, I can hear them moving around out there. Thorn, dear, bring me a poker from the fireplace, and you better put some shoes on. Do you have a plan, Grandma? I have an idea that might work. Okay, children, listen closely. This is what we're gonna do. When I say run, you run. Got that? What? That's your plan? Run where? Ready? Here we go. Grandma punches her fist right through the wall. Crash! And she grabs the rat creatures on the other side and pulls them back through into the living room. Crash! Okay, kids, run! Phone Bone just kind of says, now, Bone. Grandma's being has rat creatures chewing on her head. Phone Bone, we can't just leave you here. Thorn grabs him and says, come on, Phone Bone. Grandma says, don't worry about me. I fought the rats back in the big war. Oh my gosh. Thorn tosses Phone Bone through the new hole in the living room wall. Oh my gosh. And then rat creatures see them come running. Oh my gosh. They start running, the jaws of the rat creatures just snapping right behind them. Snap, that was close. Then suddenly the rat creatures are in front of them and they have to turn, they jump off of a ravine. The rat creatures follow them as they slide and crash through the rocks and the stones and the leaves. As they get to the bottom, Phone Bone says, get up, get up. They start running again, they leap over a log. Bam, Phone Bone hits his head against a branch. Thorn, the good friend, as always, goes back for him and picks him up and grabs him. What happened? Why are we stopping? They're behind a tree now. And Thorn says, shh. We have to go back. Grandma needs our help. Now you're worried about Grandma? There's too many. She didn't know the woods were full of monsters. So Thorn says, shh, and they peek around the side of the tree, and there's a rat creature right there. Ah! She picks up Phone Bone and uses his head to bonk the rat creature. Hey, says Phone Bone. I'm sorry, it was a reflex. More rat creatures show up, and they're on the run again. Run faster, says Thorn. Me? She picks Phone Bone up and starts carrying him. And then there's rat creatures in front of them, to the right, to the left. She runs out into a dry riverbed and she's running, but it's too late. They're completely surrounded. And that is what we call, in the business, a cliffhanger.
To wrap up, we have this little speed round where just short answer. I'm gonna ask you four questions here.
Okay.
And just looking for short answers.
Comic books.
So,
oh.
That's right. So, preferred device, pen, pencil or mouse?
Paintbrush.
Oh, wow.
I dip in ink and paint. Ink with a brush.
Really? So is it India ink that
it's
that
India
you're using?
Ink, yeah. And it's just it's a like a sable hair, like for watercolor.
So like it's not a number, it's not like
yeah, it's
an
a
O.
Number one.
Okay, we know the special recipe now. Wow, that's insane. Where's your favorite place to create?
I have a studio, and that's probably my favorite place. I can just sit up there. It's over my garage. I have my desk, I have music, I have a couch, and I have my books. It's a private place where I can turn off the world, no telephones. Well, now you have your telephone everywhere, but you know what I mean.
What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading a book called Catching Fire. It's nonfiction. It's this theory that man has been controlling and cooking food for much, much longer than we previously thought, maybe up to 2 million years ago. And maybe the change from Homo habilis, the last kind of more chimpanzee-shaped ancestor, to Homo erectus, who really suddenly has a smaller gut and is much taller. And theoretically, that's because they were cooking their food.
Fascinating.
But this is what my next book is about. It's called Tukey, Save the Human. It's about our earliest ancestors in their very first exodus out of Africa.
And were you interested in that book as you were creating Tukey?
Yeah, well, I got to the point in the story where I needed this, how does fire come into it? And I found this book, and it's fascinating, fascinating book.
So the last question is, what would this Jeff Smith say to the younger Jeff Smith there, just starting out in Bone? What would your advice be to your younger self?
Oh, you're gonna have a good time.
Oh.
Yeah, and relax, you made it.
That's great. That is absolutely great. So thank you, Jeff, for your time. There is a wealth of Jeff products that you can buy in all different shapes and sizes. And Tukey's going to be coming out here.
Yeah, probably sometime next year.
So I encourage everybody to, you know, it's a good thing to just curl up and spend a couple of days getting into parallel universes, dreams, and just really good storytelling. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.